Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy. I'm pleased to bring to you the fifth Aliyah of the Parsha of Miketz of the Book of Genesis. We now continue with Joseph's alternate plan to get the brothers to bring Benjamin to him, since, as I said before, their treatment of Benjamin will demonstrate to Joseph what type of people his brothers are, whether they have turned into better people or whether they are still the type of brothers that would sell another brother in slavery. The problem is that they reject the first offer, which was to have all of them remain in slavery to, or not slavery, all of them to remain in prison except for one who would go back and fetch the youngest, since it's an unjust way of doing things. So Joseph now presents an alternate plan. Im kenim atem achichem echad ye'aser beveit mishmarchem v'atem l'chu haviyu shever avon batechem. If you are honest, one brother will be jailed in your jailhouse, that is in the place that you've been sitting for the last 3 days, and you, that is the rest of you, can go back and bring the supplies against the famine that's in your home. So two things have really changed. First of all, only one brother is needed to guarantee the honesty of the brothers and that they'll return with Benjamin. In addition, to a certain extent, they are being presumed innocent because they get to take home all of the food that they need to live in, which means they get to make the purchase. The assumption that this, you know, this Joseph character, they don't know it's Joseph, of course, is making, is that they are honest enough at this point to be treated as if all they came for was to purchase supplies, as they said they would. Ve'et achichem akaton taviu elai, ve'ye'amenu divrechem v'lo tamutu v'yasuchein. And your youngest brother, bring him to me, and then your words will be believed, and then you won't die. And they did this. Now, what it means by they did this, it means they agreed, I think, to come out of the jailhouse. They haven't gone home yet to Jacob, but they've agreed to come out of the jailhouse, all except for a single brother that would have to go back into jail. That is, he's following their instructions. They are taking his deal. I think that what Joseph means by you won't die, velo tamutu, doesn't mean that if you come back, you don't have the brother, you'll all die. That doesn't make much sense. They wouldn't bother coming back anyway if they knew there was a death penalty. What it means is right now you're stuck in this jail and you're going to die in this jail. And I see that you don't want to take the first deal where you all sit in jail except for one person. So I'm offering you a much better deal right now. If you agree to take the deal, that's great. But if you don't, listen, you're going to stay in jail as a life sentence and it won't be a very long, happy life. Vayomru ish el achiv, aval ashemim anachnu alachinu, asher ra'inu tzarat nafsho, behitchananu elenu, velo shamanu, alkeim ba'a elenu atzara hazot. And each one said to his brother, indeed. Now, aval doesn't mean what it means in modern Hebrew, which is but. And the way we know this is because in biblical Hebrew it starts sentences. You can't start a sentence with the word but. What it means is what the Aramaic says is bikushta, or in truth, or indeed. Which means, indeed, we are guilty for our brother, meaning what we did to Joseph, in that we saw his mortal anguish, that is, his crying and pain, when he begged for mercy from us, but we refused to hear, that is, we refused to agree to help him. Due to this, all this anguish has come to us. Alkein ba'aleinu hatzarazot. So Joseph hears them admit their guilt as well as their religious integrity. That is, there is a consequence to every action. What's called mida keneged mida. God makes sure that you get paid back in kind for what you do, good or bad equally. So, and the words of the verse indicate that there is an idea of mida keneged mida, measure for measure, because they say for ignoring Joseph's tsar, his anguish, the tsar, the anguish, comes to them, using the same words. Vayan Ruvein Otam Lemor, Halo Amarti Alechem Lemor, Al Techetu Bayeled, Velo Shematem, Vegam Damo, Hinei Nidrash. But Reuven responded to them and said, isn't this what I said to you? Didn't I tell you? Is essentially what he means. Don't sin against the child, and you refuse to listen. So his blood is sought after, meaning God is looking for vengeance for the price for the blood that was spilled. Even though they don't know, of course, that he was killed, but the idea, I guess, of selling to slavery is the same as murder to a certain degree. And at this point, I think I should say a word about Reuven. First, we have the Bilha incident, where it says that Reuven slept with the Pilegesh, the concubine of Jacob, Bilha. Bilha, of course, was the handmaiden that was given to Jacob by Rachel, meaning not by his own mother, not by Reuben's own mother, Leah, but by that other mother that Rachel gave to him. Now, their Midrashic material tries to water that down because it doesn't want to have Reuben sleeping with his stepmother, which would be a terrible offense, and one would wonder why Reuben wasn't simply kicked out of the household. So what it says is that he moved the bed, that after Rachel's death, Yaakov decided to essentially, instead of sleeping with Leah, as one would expect, that is setting up his tent inside with Leah's, he decided to instead share a bed with Bilhah. And Reuven, who was the oldest son of Leah, found it so offensive that after Rachel's death, that is, I could understand while Rachel was still alive that Yaakov would sleep on a regular basis with Rachel. But once Rachel passes away, how is it possible that he doesn't go with my mother, with Leah? He sleeps with Bilhah, who was the handmaiden of Rachel. So I'm going to move the bed right out of his tent. But the simple text is that he slept with Bilhah. So one would assume a really kind of a deviant type of kid. But the verse clues us into exactly what Reuven's real problem was there. It wasn't a sexual problem. The fact that she was called a Pilegish is very strange because she was not a Pilegish. She was an Isha. That is how she is referred to. But what we find out when we read Tanakh is every time one sleeps with a Pilegish of the king, of the leader, that's a power grab to show that he deserves to be the next leader. For instance, when Avner took the Pilegish of Shaul's son, that was to indicate that he controlled the kingdom, and that was a breaking point. The same thing when Avshalom took the Pilagshim, the concubines of David, to show that he was in charge, and also when Adoniahu, Shlomo's brother who didn't become the king, tries to get the David's Pilegish, it's an attempt to show that he really deserves to be the king. So what we see is that Reuben really didn't have his kingship taken away. Yehuda had not risen to power, and even Yosef hadn't risen to power. But he was so concerned that his firstborn status would be somehow impinged on that he tried to make a statement by sleeping with his father's quote-unquote Pilegish to show I'm the next in line because only the next king is allowed to sleep with the previous king's Pilegish. There's also the incident where he finds out that Yosef has been sold, he doesn't know Yosef has been sold, is that Yosef has disappeared from the pit. Yes, he tried to trick his brothers, although he was very kind of tentative about it. He figured he'd tell his brothers that we shouldn't kill him, we'll throw him in the pit, and then I'll sneak back to the pit, and I'll make everything okay. And the words that he says are very interesting when he comes back to the pit and he finds out that Yosef's not there. He goes, Ana, ani, ana, ba. How, which literally translates as, how will I come? And the Mefarshim and the commentators say, means how am I going to go back to my father with all of this, you know, this terrible thing happened that I'll be responsible for. But really, if you notice the words, Anna, Ani, Anna, Ba, it's the same word over and over again. Ani, 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 it's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. And what I'll show you later is that, when Reuven again makes a mistake a little bit later in this Aliyah, you'll see that really Reuven's problem, it's not a matter of immaturity. It's the worst thing that you could have if you want to be the leader. It's the real sign that you're not a leader at all, not a future king at all. It's a self-centered kind of, it's all about me, it's all about what I said, it's all about what I told you to do. It's really a me, me, me kind of attitude. And that's really Reuven's failings. And if you think that I'm being a little too harsh with Reuven, well, you'll see what Rashi says about him later on. You'll see that I'm really being quite nice about it. Anyway, getting back to the narrative, Vehem lo yadu ki shomei Yosef ki amelitz beinotam, but they didn't know that Joseph could understand them since there was a translator between them, meaning that there was a person translating from the brother's Hebrew to Joseph's Egyptian and back again. And therefore, because Joseph knew what they had said, vayisom alehem, vayif, vayashov alehem, vayidaber alehem, vayikach meitam et shimon, vayasor oto le'enehem, and he spun away from them, which means he kind of distanced himself from them, and he cried, and he returned to them, and he spoke to them, and he took from them Shimon, and he imprisoned him in front of their eyes. And what we have here is one verb after another. Vayisov, vayef, vayashov, vayidaber, vayikach, vayesor. And there's the sense of haste, probably as a result of all the sorrow or the tears that have been brought on. The question is, why is he crying? So, on one hand, the tears may be sorrow for all the lost time and all the pain, which they all have gone through, because it's clear that they are essentially sitting around waiting for the axe to fall, and living in a state of constant fear, and he may feel a great deal of empathy. It may be some tears of joy as well, that, hey, my brothers are human. They recognize, if if a little better late than never, but, you know, better than never, that they have done something horrible of which they deserve the most, severe kind of punishment. And when he realizes that the brothers are potentially good people, that they've done penance of sorts, that may make him both happy and sad at the same time. Well, except for Reuven, who really doesn't carry as much guilt as he does try to selfishly avoid the guilt by saying, oh, it's all your fault, not me. Now, the question that we might ask is, why was Shimon imprisoned? And as I'll show in Parshat Vayechi, in the last Parshat in the book of Genesis, I think it's quite clear that it was Shimon and Levi who instigated the brothers to throw Joseph in the pit, as the Midrash says. I think that really holds true to the text that we'll see much later. And in addition, everybody knows what Shimon and Levi did in Shechem. The two of them together are a real nightmare. So as the Mefarshim say, if you want to avoid trouble, you get Shimon away from Levi, so he throws Shimon into jail. But Joseph is not done testing his brothers. That is, he needs to see more. In fact, he's not done testing his whole family, as I think I'll try to show, Joseph is going to be tested by, Joseph is going to be testing his whole family, including Jacob as well. Vayitzav Yosef vayimala'u et kleihem bar, ulahashiv kaspehem ish el sakov, latet lahem tzedav, ladarech, vayas lahem kain. And Joseph commanded that their bags be filled with produce, and that their money, which they had apparently already bought the supplies with, should be returned to each one bagged, and also to give them provisions for the road. And he, meaning no doubt Joseph's servants, did this to them. Of course, there's a test going on here, which is that he returned their money secretly, as we'll see, to their bags. But it never says, I mean, he sort of says, kind of matter of fact, do this, do that, do the other thing, and give them back their money. So it never becomes clear whether it was an accident or whether he just said, listen, you know, for all their troubles, I'm going to let them get the food for free. And that doubt will cause some troubles later on, as we will see. Vayis'u et shivram al chamorehem vayelchu misham. And they carried their supplies on their donkeys, and they left from there. Vayiftach ha'echad et sako latet mispo lachamoro b'malon vayar kaspo v'inehu b'fiyam tachto. And at the rest stop, one of them, opened his sack to give feed to his donkey, which was apparently in that sack, and he saw the money. Behold, it was at the mouth, i.e. the opening of the bag. Vayomer lechav, so this one says to his brothers, Hushav kaspi, v'gam hinei ba'am tachti, v'yitzei libam, v'yecherdui shalachiv le'mor, ma zot asa Elohim lanu. So the one says to the other one, says, my money has been returned. I'm translating kaspi as money. I suppose silver would be good as well, but I think I'll go with the more generic money. And in any event, the money has been returned. Indeed, it is in my baggage and their hearts. And the lave really doesn't mean the heart so much as their minds. They left them, meaning they were lost for what to do. They were kind of dumbstruck. And each one said to the other, what has, that it said in fear, they said shaking to one another, what has God done to us? Again, they assume that this is part of their punishment for their ill dealing with Joseph. But it seems that, you know, it could be now that they're a little bit shocked, that this is just too much suffering for the crime. Nonetheless, it does show, not to Joseph because he's not there, but to us, that they still believe that all of this is a consequence of their actions with Joseph. Now, apparently Joseph had commanded only one of the bags to have the cash put in the very opening of the pack, so it would be found right away before they even got home. My guess is, or actually there's a commentator, I believe the Radak says, that the other ones, that is, Joseph must have commanded that the other sacks have the returned money placed very deep into the sack, into the baggage, in order that the rest of them not discover that it was really done to everybody. Now, the Midrash says that the one, which the Torah is clearly trying to hide here, that is, there's no question when it says the one saw the money and the one said to the others, that there's somebody of significance here. And the question is, why does the Torah want to obscure it? So the Midrash says that it's not obscure at all, that the one is Levi, who, as Shimon's constant partner in crime, so to speak, was bereft and alone. He was left Echad, he was left by himself. If this is true, and it seems quite likely, it's possible to see that this is another test to see if the brothers would be willing to, well, to rat out Levi and get him jailed as well, or whether they trusted Levi when he no doubt told them that he didn't steal. That is, Levi opens up the baggage and he goes, oh my goodness, I've got the money right here. Now they don't know they have the money as well. So they think maybe it's just Levi. So they could say, oh, Levi, you're a terrible person. We're going to drag you back to Egypt and let you pay the price for it. Sit in jail with Shimon, so to speak. Or they could say, no, Levi, you know, we trust you. I'm sure you didn't steal it. I'm sure it was a complete accident. Why don't we just go home and see how it all works out? So in my opinion, this may be another past test as far as the unity of the brothers as opposed to the disunity and the hatred, which we saw. Well, which happened 20 years ago, when Yosef was, or X amount of years ago, when Yosef was sold into slavery. And they came to back to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, and told him everything that had happened to them, saying, the man who is the lord of the land. Notice the word lord is in the plural, Adonai. Even though it is referring to a single person, that's very significant, spoke with us harshly and accused us of spying out the land. The word ha'ish, by the way, usually doesn't just mean any man, but it means a person of high significance, an aristocrat or somebody of equal importance. Vanomer ilav, kinim anachnu, lo ayinu meraglim. But we said to him, we are honest, we have never been spies. Shnei masar anachnu achim, bnei avinu ha'achad, I'm sorry, Bnei Avinu Ha'echad Einenu V'Akaton Hayom Et Avinu Be'eretz Kanaan. We are 12 brothers from one father, but one is no more, referring, of course, to Joseph. And the youngest one, of course, referring to Binyamin, is today with our father in the land of Kanaan. V'yomer Aleinu Ha'ish Adonai Ha'aretz B'zot Eda Ki Chenim Atem Achichim Ha'echad Hanichu Iti V'Ra'avon Batechem Chu V'Aleichu. And the man, the lord of the land, said to us, in this way will I know that you are honest. Leave one brother with me. Notice they skip some details, and then there are some other details that we didn't know that happened that take place here. And that's the way of the Torah. It fills in spaces in one place that are missing in another. And in any event, getting back to what they said the man said, and take the supplies necessary to for the starvation that exists in your household, take it and go. V'haviyu et achichem akaton elai ve'eda'a ki lo meraglim atem ki chenim atem et achichem etein lachem et ha'aretz ve'et ha'aretz tischaru. And bring your youngest brother to me, and I will know that you are not spies. I will know that you are honest. I will return you your brother, that is your imprisoned brother, to you, and you may do business in the land. Rashi actually says the word tischaru means, like from the Aramaic schor schor, to go around the land. But I'm following Unkelus's lead here. That is, I will permit you to do business in my land. So far, Jacob hasn't said anything about the deal, because before he can, they all get a nasty shock. In fact, they never mentioned the fact that one of them found the money on the road to their father, because now they have bigger problems. And as they were emptying their sacks, behold, everyone's money string. The money at that time was stored on a string. They probably had a hole punched in it, like the old Israeli asimonim, and you would put it on a leather string, and that was what went for essentially a wallet at the time. Behold, everyone's money string was in each one's sack, and they saw the money strings, they and their father, and they were afraid. So now that they know that all the money is returned, now they know they're kind of in big trouble. They don't know what to do. Vayomer aleihem Yaakov avihem oti shikaltem Yosef enenu v'Shimon enenu v'Binyamin tikachu alai. Hayu kulana. Then Jacob said to them, "You have bereaved me. Joseph is gone and Shimon is gone, and you will take Binyamin. All of this is happening to me." Rashi points out something which seems very possible, that he accuses them of his loss of Joseph, hinting possibly that he knows or suspects that they were involved in his disappearance, and it wasn't simply a wild animal that had gotten to Joseph. And now we get back to what I said was the final Reuven incident, which really highlights his character. That is, here is personality, the selfishness, and I don't know exactly narcissistic, but the self-involved nature of Reuven really shines forth, and not in a good way at all. And as I said, if you think I was harsh to him, you should see what Rashi says. Vayomer Reuven el aviv lemor et shnei banai tamit. Im lo avi anyway lecha tina uto al yadi vani ashivenu elecha. And Reuven spoke to his father, saying, "You can kill my two sons if I do not bring him to you," meaning Binyamin. If I don't bring Binyamin back after we bring him to Egypt, give him, i.e., Binyamin, into my care, and I will return him to you. Again, it's all about me, me, me. I'll take care of it. And the question is: does he really, really mean it? That his sons, he's willing to, if Binyamin doesn't manage to come back, that he's willing to kill his two sons as setting up his two sons as a surety, as a kind of a down payment against bringing back Binyamin. Now, some people would argue that that's not selfish at all, because one would never want to lose their sons. But I don't think that it works that way. That is, it's always easier to sacrifice somebody else than it is to sacrifice oneself. To pull the trigger on oneself is something which requires, in my opinion, a great deal of bravery. So maybe he doesn't really think that his sons will be killed because he's so confident he'll succeed. But the bottom line is he doesn't think about the consequences of his words and how they'll affect anybody except for themselves. Again, look at how many times the word I is used in this pasuk. Shnei banai imlo avienu. It's all about me, 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 me. And therefore, Jacob doesn't take him seriously. In fact, he's super scathing in the fact that he doesn't even answer him. He ignores him completely. What Rashi does is he actually mentions a medrash that what Yaakov says is to him, that he kind of fills in a conversation where Yaakov does scathe him directly, even though, in my opinion, the Torah does a better job of scathing him because the Torah just has Yaakov ignore him completely. But what Rashi says that, what Yaakov says back to Reuven is, you're going to put up your two sons as mortgage for my son? You think your two sons are yours? They belong to you? I think you're wrong, Reuven, says Jacob. Your two sons belong to me. I'm the father of this house. So essentially, you've sacrificed absolutely nothing. You've committed absolutely nothing to saving, to promising to save my son, Binyamin. Anyway, let's continue on to the fact that he does not actually respond to Reuven. Vayomer lo yered bni imachem ki achiv meit v'hu levadon nishar ukra'ahu ason baderech asher telchuva v'oradtem et seifati biagon sha'ola. And he said, my son will not go with you all. Notice he doesn't speak to Reuven directly. He says, imachem, to you all. He speaks to all the brothers, essentially ignoring Reuven. Indeed, he says, his brother is dead, and he alone is left to me, and a tragedy will happen to him on the road that you travel on, and in my old age, I will find my grave in sorrow, which means I'll wind up dying of pain and anguish, a dried out man, a gray haired man, as soon as I find out that Binyamin is also lost to me. Now, as I said, I think Joseph, who was very intuitive about how people respond and very knowledgeable about what the future may lie, I think he knows the extreme that he was pushing his family into, not only the brothers, but Jacob as well. It's possible, and I know this is just a possibility, but I believe it's true, that he's pushing Jacob once again to play his favorites and identify his son, his only son, oh, so to speak, his beloved son from his beloved wife Rachel, as Binyamin. He says, how dare you take my son? So what are they, chop liver? But the answer is, we've seen this before, and it shouldn't surprise us. Yaakov, it was love at first sight with Rachel. He lost her for reasons which I think he suspects are partially his own, for promising that anybody who had stole the trafim, these devices from Laban would be punished, and then his wife dies. And all he has left is this one son, Binyamin. Jacob loves him very much. And his love, a very similar love to Yosef, caused incredible jealousy and hatred to rule the day, which would cost nearly Joseph his life and cause the family their integrity. So I think Joseph may be setting them up again. Let's see what's happened to my family. Are they worth me identifying them myself so we could reunite? Or are they all split up in petty hatreds and jealousy and total disregard for each other? So he says, I think, let's see what happens when the brothers go back and say, listen, if you don't give us Binyamin, we're going to lose Shimon. Because essentially what Jacob says is, tough, I am not going to trade Binyamin for Shimon. Will that once again push the brothers into an extreme hate situation? The answer, by the way, is no, as we will soon see. We now begin the next chapter, and clearly some time has passed. While the family struggles with Jacob's decision not to comply with Joseph, well, they don't know it's Joseph, but with Joseph's request at the expense of possible starvation, because they're starving. V'ha'ra'av kaved ba'aretz, and the famine was heavy in the land, which means it's getting worse and worse and worse, which means Jacob is pushed to extremes. So he comes up with the following plan, since he's still not about to trade Binyamin for the sake of Shimon. He's not willing to trade Binyamin for anything. Vayhi kasher kilu le'echol et ha'shever asher evim mitzrayim vayomer aleihem avihem shuvu shivru lanu mat ochel. And when it was that they finished to eat the surplus that they had brought from Egypt, and the supplies, I should say, that they brought from Egypt, and their father said to them, return and get a little more supplies. Now, Jacob is not dumb. I think what he's saying is, he's hoping that if they only go back and ask for just a little bit more, that this Joseph person, who they don't know is Joseph, will, you know, allow them to get a little bit more, and the status quo will change. Shimon will stay in jail, and Binyamin, even though he doesn't show up, they'll give him a little bit of food. Again, I think Joseph is intentionally pushing the family into an extreme pressure, and in fact, the same extreme pressure that caused all those terrible sins so many years ago. And it's a little bit like what the Rambam says about sin and repentance. You could say you're sorry, you could identify your sin, you could promise never to do it again, but the only way that you really know that you've done full repentance is for the same situation to come up again, and you don't do the same sin as you did before. So I don't want to say that the Yosef knew about the Rambam, but I think he knew about this idea. I need to know whether my family is redeemable. And the only way for me to know that is to once again set up a situation where Jacob's loved son, and of course Joseph knows that Jacob loves Binyamin so much that he's willing to put them in front of the other kids, because when the brothers came down to Egypt, Benjamin wasn't with them. And they said, because he's with my father didn't want to let him go. So he probably deduces that the father won't want to let him go because he's afraid of losing him. So he says, once again, let's put up with Rachel's child against the other brothers and see how the family reacts. Vayomer elav Yehuda lemor, ha'ed ha'id banu ha'ish lemor, lo tiru panai, bilti achichem itchem. But Judah knows that Shimon or no, they won't get any food, not even a little tiny bit as Jacob was hoping, unless Benjamin is in the deal. So Yehuda says to him, getting back to the verse, he says to Jacob, saying, the man, that is that important man, surely swore to us, he really swore to us, that you will not get an audience with me if your brother, Benjamin, your youngest brother, is not there. If you, Judah is speaking to Jacob, his father, if you would only find it in yourself to send our brother with us, we can go and we can get supplies for you. But if you don't send him, we will not go. Since that man said to us, you won't get an audience with me without your brother with you. Vayomer Yisrael, lama hari otem li, lagid la'ish ha'od lachem ach. And Israel said, what have you caught? Why have you done all this badness to me by telling that man that you had another brother? Vayomeru sha'ol sha'al ha'ish lanu le'ul molad tenu le'mor ha'od avichem chai ha'ish chem ach. Vanagin lo opiyan devarim ha'ilev ha'yadoa nedaki yomar oridu et achem. But they said to him, the man asked us, he really asked us about our family, saying, is your father still alive? Do you have a brother? And we told him based on these words, based on what he asked us. How could we know that he would say, bring down your brother? Now, this conversation was never in the text. We never knew that Yosef had asked them these questions, that's why they responded about the fact that they had a brother who was alive. But again, that's how the Bible works. It's not a diary. It doesn't include every last word. It modifies things to make the theme come true. And we have to assume that Joseph just wouldn't scream guilty, guilty, guilty at them without some pretense of finding out the facts or doing a proper investigation. Now, the fact that Joseph seemed like he was running a fair investigation, but was actually, in my opinion, testing their sense of responsibility to the family, doesn't change the fact that there was a lot more to the conversation than actually meets the text. And we just found out that Joseph sort of pressed them into admitting that they had a brother so that he could test them about that very thing. First of all, test to see whether they treated him like a brother. And once they did treat him like a brother, to test them, what would it really happen if they really pushed them to the extreme? And now comes the turning point. The moment that we discover who the true leader of Israel is. It's not Joseph, really. It's Yehuda. Yehuda's colors shine. And they're like a complete antithesis to Reuven. Where Reuven cares about himself, he's concerned about himself, he's not ready to make sacrifices of himself. Yehuda cares about other people, and he's willing to sacrifice himself for the sake of other people. And that's why you see right here why Yehuda becomes essentially the very root of kingship in Israel and not Reuven. For where Reuven was willing to sacrifice his two sons, if he meant it at all, Yehuda is willing to sacrifice his own life for the sake of Binyamin, and for the sake of his father's love of Binyamin, which is clearly, at least at face value, greater than his father's love for himself. But because that's what his father loves, and because he is his father's son, he is going to sacrifice, or be willing to sacrifice himself for what his father wants. And finally, Yehuda, who had those problems all along, because he's the one who instigated the brothers to sell Joseph. Sure, they weren't going to kill them, but he could have convinced them not to sell Joseph. But he comes up with this idea, but finally he has really redeemed himself. Vayomer Yudal Yisrael Aviv Shilcha Hanar Iti. Notice he calls Binyamin the Nar, just like Yosef was called the Nar. Send the young man with me. And keep in mind, he's not a baby anymore, Binyamin. He's got to be in his 20s, probably wife and kids. But he calls him a Nar because he's trying to say, I remember Yosef, and I'm telling you, trust me with the Nar. I won't fail you this time. And Yehuda said to Israel, his father, send the child with me, send the Nar with me. Let me get up and let me go so that we can all live and not die, quoting his father from the previous Aliyah. Both we won't die, you won't die, and none of our children will die. And now here comes the majesty of Yehuda. Anochi e'ervenu. I will be his guarantee. I will put my own life up for his life. Mi yadi tevakshenu. From my hand you can demand the price. Im lo havioti velecha v'hitzaktiv lefanecha. If I do not bring him back to you, and if I do not present it to you, v'chatati lecha kol hayamim, I will be guilty to you forever. Which, as Rashi points out, is not just in this life, but is in the afterlife as well. That is, if Binyamin does not come back, my life instead of his. But Yehuda, the leader, any leader, needs not only to be self-sacrificing and sincerely self-sacrificing for the sake of his people, for the sake of the integrity of his nation, he must show some steel as well. And that's what he does in this next verse. Ki lulei hitmahmanu ki ata shamnu zeh pamayim. Indeed, if it were not that we have delayed, by now we could have returned twice. The change of name, by the way, from Yaakov up to this point to Israel, where Yehuda starts talking to him, may indicate that that's what's happening here. Judah's rise finally to his potential of leadership, of the willing to sacrifice himself for the good of his people, is of national significance. So therefore, it could be why Jacob's name is turning from Jacob to Israel. Vayomer alehem Yisrael avihem im kein efo zot asu chum izimrat haaretz. So Israel, their father, says to them, if so, do it like this, which means if you're going to go down, make sure you do it the right way. Take from the prunings of the land into your bags and bring the man, that is that person who is demanding all these things, and offering some balm, some honey, some delicacies, some ladanum, some pistachios, and some almonds. Interesting enough, many of these things were the ones that were, these things were identified as being carried down by the Ishmaelites that were going down in the chapter where Joseph was sold. Whether that's a coincidence or not, I can't say. Now, the precise meaning of some of these things is unclear. Ladanum and balm are just a guess. And if you're interested in it, kind of an interesting study where Eben Ezra goes through some of these things and sort of tries to show that the people of his time were not sure, and they presented all kinds of theories. So see Ibn Ezra on chapter 37, verse 25. V'chesef mishnei chubi etchem. So Yaakov continues with his advice. V'etakesef amusha b'fi amtichot techem tashivu b'etchem ulai mishkehu. Take back double the money with you. So the money that was returned in your baggage, take that back with you because maybe it was a mistake. Give it back. So what he essentially says, give it back to the man. Just admit, look, we found this money. Maybe you meant for us to have it. Maybe you meant for us to take free, but we're not taking a chance. And that proves a certain amount of honesty, to say the least. Ve'et achichem kachu v'kumu shuvu el ha'ish. As for your brother, take him, get up, and return to the man. So Yaakov finally wakes up because of the strength and the power behind Yehuda's words, and he says, go. Ve'el Shaddai yitain lachem rachamim lifnei ha'ish, v'shilach lachem et achichem acher ve'binyamin, v'ani kasher shakolti. Shakalti. And let the powerful God, El Shaddai, let him grant you mercy before that man, meaning let the man be inspired by God to treat you mercifully. Because Yaakov doesn't think there's really much of a chance. He probably thinks they're being played. So he's hoping that the man with God's grace will treat them well. And he should send you out with your brother, your other brother, meaning Shimon, and with Binyamin. And I, if I am bereft, so will I be bereft. Or perhaps, and I, what will happen is if I was bereft like I was with Yosef, so be it, I will be bereft again, but do what you must. Vayichu anashim et amincha hazot, umishnei kesef lachu biyadam, vebinyamin, vayakumo, vayerdu mitzrayim, viyamdu lifnei Yosef. So the men, yes, now the brothers are for the first time called anashim. Is it significant? I can't say for sure, but it certainly seems significant. They took the gifts, they took the double money in their hands, they took Benjamin, and they got up and they went down to Egypt and they presented themselves before Joseph. Tune in next time to see what happens next.